Welcome to the K Thompson Live Show. My name is Eric Payne. I am the son of the K Thompson Live Show, one of the co-hosts, and you are
K Thompson. You know, the host of the show, one of the hosts, one of the co-hosts, and want to get right to what we have to talk about. We have a lot to talk about today. There's so many things going on, especially with ISIS and, you know, just that, all that kind of stuff, which is very upsetting. The Thanksgiving Day Parade is tomorrow, and everybody's concerned about the crowds and what's going to be going on, if anything. So we really want to get started with this show so we can get on it. We're going to be talking to Wayne Gilman when he calls in, our co-host, and also Mal Wolf when he calls in. And we want to give you a lot of information about what's going on downtown Newark and a number of other places. So they are going to be calling in just as soon as we are on the air and going, and we are on the air, and going into things. A lot of things going on, though. It's a scary situation all over the country. We have another debate, which sometimes is really stupid, you know, and it's amazing, you know. Trump is still Trump, still being a comedian, and trying to be president of the country. And I find that really absolutely sickening. And while we're waiting for Mal Wolfe to call in, you know, we're going to be, you know, just talking about lots of things. So, Eric?
Okay. So anyway, we're going to talk about some things in the news and how Americans, you know, have been a travel advisory, worldwide travel advisory for Americans all over the world. And we also have the madness in Chicago, where a young black man was murdered by a police officer and
shot 16 times.
Shot 16 times, and he was murdered by this police officer, and it happened a year ago. And so it's just now coming to the forefront of many people that are hearing about it. It happened a year ago. It was apparently covered up or not revealed to the public until just recently. The videotape of the shooting came out. In full disclosure, the family of the young man did not want the tape revealed for a number of reasons. Obviously, they don't want to see that over and over again of their son being murdered. And he was committed a crime, a couple of crimes, a vandalizing, from what I understand, and he vandalized a few cars. He was high on, they say, angel dust, and he was brandishing a knife. But if anybody has seen the tape by now, they know that he was not approaching the police officer, at least not to have been shot as many times. And the majority of times he was shot, he was already on the ground. So you have his lawyer claiming that the police officer was in fear of his life. And it's come out that this police officer has had a number of complaints against him during his tenure on the force. This situation follows on the heels of the shooting of black protesters in Minneapolis, Minnesota, at a protest rally where some racists dressed up. They had ski masks on and apparently they had bulletproof vests on. They were in the crowd acting as if they were part of the protesters when some protesters escorted them away and they opened fire on them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. No, I'm really very upset about that, you know, because when I first read that story and it happened a year ago, I said, what in the world is going on? And then, of course, what I've heard also that this policeman had murdered this kid, and then we actually saw the tape. And the tapes were so raw and so intensely, you know, I don't know, I just got so very tense and, you know, really, really very upset about the whole thing. But because we're waiting for Mal Wolfe to call in, because we have some information from him that we want to for him to give out to people in Newark and everyplace else, because Newark is undergoing a lot of growth, and we want to know what Mal's company is doing. And I think that's going to be, you know, very interesting for us to hear. Also, Wayne Gilman, we're waiting for him to call in now, and we're hoping that he's going to be calling in as soon as he can. Now, also, we have another guest that, you know, I've been talking to for a long time. I think this person is still on the air. He's going to have a sit-up as I'm saying that. But Bob Law, we're going to be talking to him around 8:25. So he is, I don't know if he's still with WWRL or wherever else, but we're going to find out exactly what Bob Law is doing. So if Val Wolfhook is trying to get through and Wayne Gilman is trying to get through, okay, we're waiting. So what else about the ISIS and the preparations for, you know, the crowds in New York tomorrow on the Thanksgiving Day parade there?
Right. There's a couple of preparations. Let's continue to talk about the hot stories of the news. That's where I'd like to get back to tomorrow. So we talked about these two shootings, which are very similar, back to the Chicago one. It was very similar to, reminds me of the gentleman in South Carolina, the middle-aged gentleman, Walter Scott, I believe, was shot in the back as he ran from a police officer because he had some outstanding traffic and driver's license issues. And this is this also was caught on tape. He was running away from the police. Another instance, if it hadn't been caught on tape and this gentleman hadn't taped this particular show, this particular instance, that would have been brushed under the rug as well. So we have a repetitive problem in this country, and you said before, Mom, that you're surprised that this keeps happening over and over again. I'm under the impression that it's just because we have cameras in our phones nowadays that we really know about it. But either way, it is something that is really despicable that's going on in our country, and it's coming. It's something that seems to be boiling to a head. And then you have a presidential candidate, Donald Trump, who seems to egg on this type of behavior, who seems to feed into the racist tendencies of some people, or the majority of his supporters are seem to be condoning the type of language that he uses over and over again to divide people, even though he says that he is going to be the greatest president, that he's going to bring everybody together and all of these ridiculous things. But still and yet, when they had a Black Lives protester at his event the other day, some people roughed this gentleman up instead of just kind of shouting him down, which is usually what happens in this scenario. And usually the candidate that is there takes the high road and tries to tell the person, tries to, you know, have people be patient with him, with the person and all that. But, of course, Donald Trump being Donald Trump, who really is running to be emperor and king of America, in my personal opinion, kind of encouraged the people to get the guy out of there, throw him out. And the next morning on the Fox Friends and Family, or the whatever the Fox show is, he kind of alluded to the fact that maybe the guy should have been roughed up. So that tells you that in a President Trump's world, if you disagree with him, you're going to expect to be physically accosted. At least that's from my personal opinion. And here I believe we have Mal Wolfolk calling in, and your mic is open. Is this you, Mal? Hello, caller. Hello, caller at a 914 area code.
Oh, okay. That's me. Wayne.
Oh, that's Wayne. Oh, and I'm sorry. I didn't recognize your number again. So what do you think, you know, about the current news stories going on? We've got a lot of hot things happening in the news past couple of days. What do you think about the current shootings of protesters, the shooting of an unarmed black guy who clearly had committed some crimes? And also we have Donald Trump seeming to feed into this frenzy, not only of divisiveness, but he released that kind of informational thing about the percentage of times that black people killed white people or white people killed by blacks, which was totally fabricated. And he got the source of the information was from a white supremacist website, from what I understand. But he still promotes it as if it's okay. So he's insulted black people, Hispanic people, promotes having Muslims register, which is akin to apartheid, I believe, referred to a program that was despicable to Mexican-Americans called Operation Wetback. You know, what do you think about this? And I think we have Mal also. We'll bring him into the discussion and get into the things that him and my mom want to talk about. I just want to get your opinion about that, Wayne.
Well, I'll be quick because I'm just now joining. And the only thing I can say is that I just find it horrific what's going on in the world now. I know the Laquan McDonald shooting occurred before, but just the fact that Chicagoans are able to see, you know, how horribly this young man was shot down 16 times. You know, what more can be said about that? It's just despicable what goes on. There's got to be a need for behavior modification with the police across the country. As for Donald Trump, I am astounded. You know, it never seems to stop. This train has been running express. He seems to be picking up more passengers each town he gets into. And he feeds the media with this ridiculous vitriol without any substance. And then when he is looking to quote, I mean, he said something the other day that he took out of the Washington Post, which turned out to be something that was even the reporter who wrote the story denied that he had actually had seen people in Jersey City jumping up and down after the 9/11 attack. And now this bit of information you're telling me with respect to the police and black and white shootings, it's horrendous, man. I mean, it just bothers me that he's getting all this attention still.
That's ridiculous, because we lived, at that time I was living right across the water, and we saw the plane hitting the building and whatnot. Also, know a lot of people in Jersey City, they did not say anything about people partying and having, you know, a grand old time. We don't know where he gets these stories, because sometimes people do go out and, you know, have a party on their balconies and whatnot. But no one did that. And they keep telling him that no one did it, but he persists in that. I think that he, you know, he's kind of off from the center. Can you imagine somebody like him, you know, as president of the country? He would have a Senate.
That's what's
trouble.
Scary.
Yeah.
That is what's scary.
And, you know,
scary.
I think Mal Wolf will join and go down. So we're going to get him on this also, Wayne. Mal, are you on?
Yeah, hi. How's everybody?
Hi.
Hi, Mal.
Okay. Yeah, well, the other thing, though, and folks, is, the counter comment is that clearly his following indicates the frustration of a lot of people who feel as though our current elected officials are not listening to them at all and really don't have their best interests at heart. You know, I mean, I wish it was more complicated than that, but, you know, folks are willing to follow anybody else but the traditional, formerly elected officials who in the last, I guess, 30, 40, 50 years, you know, 60 years almost, judging by the ages of the people you see in Trump rallies, I believe, you know, that they've been lied to repeatedly. The folks make promises, get into office to get them, come back, make promises, get into office to get them. And it's a greater commentary on the several thousand elected officials to the state and federal elected officials than it is on Trump.
That's amazing.
You don't think that, Mal, hey, how you doing, Sarah? You don't think that, I agree with that, but I also think that there's a lot of angry white folks out there because they feel that they're losing control or they don't have the first-class citizens status that they once enjoyed as fully as they enjoyed it, and he has a lot of angry white voters that are upset that a black male is elected president, that we have so many immigrants here, we have Muslims coming in, and we have all of this stuff, and Donald Trump says exactly what's been on their mind, and exactly what they've been feeling, as if, and that is that America is not a white nation anymore. A lot of them seem to feel that, you know, the white rights are being infringed upon, that they're being discriminated against. And he seems to tap into that, and he feeds into that. And he clearly is Machiavellian in his approach. He does that. He has no concept or no concern about how he gets to the presidency.
And to your point, clearly he doesn't. Clearly that's how they feel. The irony is that, without admitting it, they've admitted that they understand the 1% of the people controlling 50% of the economy. They just can't bring themselves to articulating it. But they're figuring out it's not any immigrants' problem that they're in the state they're in, whether they feel that they have a loss of status or a loss of jobs or diversity or anything else. it's their own elected officials. I mean, you look at Congress and you look at the U.S. Senate, you know, really, really? Barack Obama, who's been in for 6 years, has put you in the position you're in since World War II? Got set to blame, really, with a straight face? You know, so the undercurrent is that they're mad at themselves for being duped.
Exactly.
And chickens are coming home to roost.
Right, and it's their own, this kind of policy, I think, that America has, kind of this imperialistic kind of go conquer the world thing. Because what seems to happen is that they don't seem to understand. You know, I don't think people in these other countries are born or wake up hating America for no reason.
Yeah.
And clearly it's the things that they've seen in their country that America has done, the collateral damage in fighting these wars and how many of the civilians have been killed in all of these wars. And, you know, it can have a tendency to make you hate people if you have a large portion of your family that's been annihilated by the bombs of a certain country. I mean, I think personally it's the same thing that a lot of African Americans feel, that we're not a part of this country because of the constant and nowadays the obvious racism and almost seeming like a systematic murder of black people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, no doubt. No, that was clearly this last year has shown that. You know, it's almost like someplace people are getting together and letting these, because they all think, well, I was going to say, these younger police officers, but they're not all younger. But clearly, there have been more recorded, and part of it we know is because there have been cameras and phones and people being able to take pictures, so we don't know if the numbers are really up or whether the documentation is just better.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, I mean, it gets to be real surprising to me when the first couple guys are indicted for murder and sent away, and people are still willing to do it, figuring that they will get away with it. So the latest guy in Chicago, of course, has been indicted for murder, probably get convicted because of the film, and then we'll see, you know, what the tipping point is. Where will folks around the country finally see this one, which I think will maybe be the third one, where somebody's actually indicted for murder, or worse, like some of the policemen were in Baltimore, and finally get it. You know, you have all this other training to subdue people when your life is not in danger, and that's what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I
want to go in a different direction right now. Now, you both have been in New York City, you know. Within the last couple of days, I assume, shall I? Can I assume that?
Yeah.
That you both have been in New York? All right. What is it like on the streets of New York? What is it like? I mean, are there... You know, we keep seeing cops out there with, you know, the artillery, the guns and everything. Is it like that? What is it like, actually, for you to have been there? I haven't been downtown Manhattan in a long time, or even Harlem.
Mm. Well, mid-Manhattan, the subway systems and a lot of the, you know, Penn Station, Grand Central Station, you know, for the past year or so, there's been militia, or I guess maybe it's 2 or 3 years now. I mean, you go down there and you see, you know, National Guard, I guess they are, you know, in combat fatigues and M16s in public areas. And the police and the subway station, many of them, they have tables set up, you know, with a sign that says, you know, whatever you have with you is subject to search at any moment.
Wow,
you know,
okay.
With no probable cause. Police, you know, now have the right to just say, hey, what's in that bag? And bring it over here and empty it out on the table and, you know, full public view. So, you know, I guess the idea is that would be a deterrent. And I don't have at hand the statistics to show if it is a deterrent, but certainly folks are being more careful, you know, about carrying or trying to carry weapons into the subway as a result of that. And to my knowledge, that right to incidental search has not been abused in New York.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, what about you?
No, I really have not been on the trains in a while, but I do recall going into Grand Central Station and witnessing exactly what Mal was talking about. But there has certainly been an increased presence, and to the point where even while I'm driving, like in last weekend I was coming down from Norwalk, Connecticut, going into Westchester on the Hutchinson River Parkway. The traffic was backed up at a certain point just after the state line. I got off, and state troopers were right there. And as I got on the side road going through Westchester to get back to my home, a cop, or I should say a trooper, was in a in one of his cars. It was a car that was, you know, had the sign in saying that he was a police officer and all that. And he was speeding behind me, so I pulled over to give him access to the road because I was just trying to find my way to avoid traffic. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he stops me. And I have to say that I was a little taken aback about my own paranoia when it comes to these people who are law enforcement, because I certainly don't want to give the impression that I'm up to some act of malfeasance or trumpeting, you know, to trigger, you know, a problem. But, you know, I think a lot of us, particularly in areas where you know that are known to have problems, you know, you're putting your guard up a little bit. And I just think it's just a sign of the time, you know. I don't want to go out there, and I've been advised from a number of friends and even one or two family members to go out and take a course in you know, the shooting range and get a licensed gun and all that business. But I'm still opposed to that.
You know, we're getting status in on your call.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Don't worry, we're going to hang in there. I want to tell everybody we're expecting to talk to Bob Law tonight. You know, Bob Law.
I could call back on another line with that.
I think it might be yours, Mal. Your line. If you're someplace with a lot of people or have some radio on in the background.
Yes.
A lot of that background noise is kind of over.
Okay, I apologize. Let me try to call back from a more quiet place.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, and we're going to be joined too with Bob Lowen in about 5 or 10 minutes also. So we won't have it. Wow, you haven't heard from him in a long time.
Yeah, Wayne? I haven't spoken to him in years.
He's still on, I think. We had a great conversation.
See his byline from time to time on pieces that he's written and stuff like that. But I have not physically spoken to Bob Law, so that's it's interesting.
Yeah.
I look forward to it.
If we can get to talking about, I think you guys had mentioned briefly about Donald Trump claiming that Muslims were cheering 9/11 from in Jersey City, which no one has authenticated, and everyone has debunked that lie. But it's just it's ironic. It's not ironic. It's just unbelievable that you have an individual who's willing to say or do anything to get elected. But I'm not really that surprised, because this guy is a CEO. He's a rich man. And he's not used to really having anybody disagree with him or do anything that he doesn't want them to do. And just to see all of these people, particularly when I see people of color, that are sitting in the background and talking about and listening to all of the crazy stuff that this guy is saying, it's just, I wonder what they're thinking. You know, I mean, you see this gentleman that's saying these things that are very borderline racist, and you're sitting in the audience, and you're a member of this group, and I don't know whether they're there to see the Donald Trump show or whatever, but it's really a big statement about America and just how much we are into the culture of celebrity, because, you know, he's been on TV, and also we worship wealth in this country, clearly, America being the capitalist society that it is. But I wonder if at the very least, the very minimum, if some of these people just get tired of hearing this guy brag, you know, because he's just, I'm the greatest, I can do everything, I remember everything. I mean, wouldn't you sit, I mean, I can't listen to him for more than 5 minutes, and I'm tired of hearing this guy brag, you know, And I'm wondering why, how are these people able to sit there and listen to this idiot? So,
I was thinking, not to cut you off, Eric, but I really think the problem is that none of the other Republican candidates have been able to pierce the corporate veil, if you will, when it comes to Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a machine. He's a media machine. And you have other candidates who are professional politicians. You know, the only time I see Trump in a very vulnerable situation is when you're discussing and discussing with some sort of clinical analysis world events, even economics, you know, in some instances, he'll get very quiet and withdrawn, you know? He's only good for the one-liners, and even at that, it becomes boring. But I agree with you. I mean, I find it unfathomable when I see young people, so-called future constituents of his. The last couple of campaign stops, there were a couple of young Asian women, and they were clearly young to me in the audience, and I think they were strategically placed there to show some measure of diversity. And they're all, you know, waving the Trump sign and all that crap. I mean, it is despicable.
We are now, Wayne, being joined by Bob Law. He's on the line. Bob, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well,
can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're fine. You're on with Wayne Gilman and Mal Wolfhook, and my son, Eric Payne.
Well, I'm glad to be with these brothers. I know all of those names.
Yeah, good evening, Dr. Law.
So what have you been doing, Bob Law?
Well, I heard you talking about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And people are, they talk about it as though Donald Trump's appeal is kind of a mystery. Why would anybody be at all interested in Donald Trump? I think that the conversations have avoided, in many instances, Donald Trump's real appeal. See, Donald Trump is a Donald Trump says that a white guy should run the America, and America should run the world. And that's what a great many white Americans in particular want to hear. When Donald Trump is the kind of the poster child for, see, he's a mediocre white man who prospers as a result of the advantages set aside for white men. He inherited his money from his father. He's run the company in the ground on more than one occasion. He's filed bankruptcy a couple of times. But if a mediocre white guy can become president, it is reassuring to a great many white people who count on white privilege in order to prosper. So you've got some white men. Kennedy started this thing about the best and the brightest. You know, you've got white men, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, and these guys have a different kind of persona. This is calling on excellence, and there are white men who don't want to hear that. They don't want to have to be excellent. They like the fact that a white high school graduate can make more money than a black college graduate. They like that. And Donald Trump represents the victory of mediocrity and white supremacy. So you have a great many people who are attracted to Trump because he personifies the very real American dream. If you are white, you can be mediocre and you can run the country. You don't have to be a talented white guy. That, you know, there are many white people who want to get away from that. Now you have to be talented. You have to be, they make, you know, you remember the a couple of years ago when all the Hillary Clinton jokes were going around, and all the jokes talked about her intellect. You know, they all made fun of how smart she is, how she's really running the country, how, remember the joke about her coming into, Bill Clinton and Hillary driving into a garage, into a gas station, and the guy in the gas station was her old high school boyfriend. And she runs mm-hmm. down and hugs him. And remember that joke? And they would say, then she gets back in the car and she says to Bill Clinton, he says to her, oh, so see, if you had married him, you'd be the wife of a gas station attendant. And she says, no, if I had married him, he'd be president. All of the jokes were around her intellect. And there are a great many white people who resent that. They don't want to have to be excellent. And Donald Trump is a perfect example of the automatic victory of white supremacy.
Mr. Law, how you doing? This is Eric. You know, I absolutely agree with you. I'd like to add, though, that we already had a mediocre white president, and that was W. And maybe he was a little less than mediocre because he was pretty dumb himself. But I absolutely agree with you, you know, because there was a time, you know, that a lot of folks, Caucasian folks, felt in America, well, at least I'm not black. You know, that was mm-hmm. the thing going in veins, what you're talking about. That was the one thing that they had to go on, you know, in times of slavery and all that, that they still could rely on, I'm still a white man in America, and you're not
absolutely.
Black.
Absolutely.
And
see,
that is,
Barack Obama is a Harvard graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Barack Obama is challenged to be perfect, excellent, get everything right. You know, Barack Obama had to be, and he had to be excellent, like Jackie Robinson when he broke into Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
And so whites see, they want to get away from that. See, but the point is with Donald Trump is it allows white Americans, many white Americans, to say, the black guy has got to be a Harvard graduate. The black guy has to be excellent. The black guy can never get angry. The black guy has to be perfect. And that's something that we set aside for blacks only. The white guy can be mediocre. He can see Donald Trump is arrogant. He's a bully. He's uninformed. He's absolutely mediocre, but he's a bully. And that's what a lot of Americans seem to want. They want to get back. They want to get to a state where everybody in the world is afraid of America. You know, so you know, people used to go, Americans would go visit countries around the world, and that's where the term the ugly American came from, because
mm-hmm.
Americans would travel around the world and would be disrespectful and intolerant and discourteous and arrogant. So that whole term the ugly American came from. But Americans, there are still Americans, excuse me, who want to go back to that. They want that privilege. And Donald Trump represents that. People don't care about Donald Trump's position on immigrants. I heard the comedian George Lopez point out the other night that all of Donald Trump's wives were immigrants. They don't really care about Donald Trump and his hypocritical position on immigrants or anything. The things that he says about black people, the things he says about women, the things he says about the other Republican candidates, they don't really care. They like the fact that he can say those kind of things. And for mediocre white people, it is important that they are able to get away with that kind of arrogance and mediocrity. So they like Donald Trump, because if Donald Trump can win, and even if he can't win, you know, if Donald Trump is at least promoting the idea that any white guy is better than a Harvard-graduated, intelligent, competent black guy. Any ordinary white guy. And that's what the ordinary white guy wants to see.
I just, if I might, Dr. Will, I just want to interject here the whole Ben Carson phenomenon, because his poll numbers up until recently were almost tantamount to what Trump was getting.
Mm-hmm.
How do you explain his success? Because I don't know. I mean, I know he's a world-renowned surgeon. I don't know if he went to Harvard. I agree with what you're saying with respect to Barack Obama. But, you know, Carson is like really, I don't know. I mean, I don't understand his popularity.
You remember the first time around what people said about Barack Obama was that he can never be angry. The one thing that whites will not tolerate is the angry black man. Obama, as is the case with a lot of other black people, have to be cautious, careful. I remember many, many years ago, nobody in this conversation will go back this far, but once Sammy Davis Jr. hosted the Tonight Show, and at the end of the show, he would come out and hold up his fist, and you remember the fingers, the two fingers with the peace sign?
Yeah, yeah.
So
right.
He would come out, hold up the peace sign, and make a fist. Well, white folk were outraged because they said he can say peace, but he can't say power. We won't have it. And he had to come back on. They got phone calls and telegrams, and he had to come back on in the middle of the week of that show and apologize. And he said, I was not trying to say peace and power. I was trying to say peace all come together. But they, but whites would not and will not tolerate a strident black man. They won't tolerate a stand-up, outspoken. You know, they want a strong black man. So if they could invent, if white supremacy could invent a black man, you know, if they could create him, like with that 3D computer program where you can, where they're making guns with the computer and print out the ideal black man, they would print out Ben Carson. See, Ben Carson is non-threatening. Look at the debates. When you look at the Republican debates, so you can just go back, look at the film from the last one. All of the men are wearing dark suits, white shirts, and red ties. That's what professional politicians wear. That's what the research says is the power look. The research says that's what gives the viewer and the voter confidence in you. So they all, not only Republicans, all of them, they wear dark suits, white shirts, red ties, except Ben. Ben wears a gray tie. He doesn't even attempt to identify with the power imagery that all the other candidates are identifying with. He's quiet. He's soft-spoken. He's apologetic. He's the perfect black man. This is Ben Carson is being used to say to black people, this is what you should be. If we like this, we approve of this, we're not going to vote for you. But here's the deal. The same thing happened with Herman Cain. The black guy is going to be well-received by the hypocritical Republican voters. He's going to be well-received. And at one point in the campaign, and Ben Carson is about there now, the black guy has to say or do something that sabotages his own candidacy. And if you remember, Herman Cain stepped down. There was some, I forgot what it was now, but there was some thing with the woman.
Right. It was the issue with the woman that really kind of tanked Herman Cain. And on top of him being kind of a buffoonish, jokey kind of character as well.
Right. So whites never had to stop voting for him to reveal the fact that they were never serious in the first place. The agreement is he will eventually step out of the race, not because whites are rejecting him, but because of some contradiction in his own candidacy. Same thing is happening with Ben Carson. Where Ben Carson now begins to say silly things and other things come up, and he lied in his book about being offered a scholarship to West Point, and something else is going to come up.
We have
he's going to step down. He's beginning to do, and a lot of little chinks are appearing, so that as white voters, as Republican voters, stop supporting him. It's not because their racism is ultimately or finally coming out, but it is because of all of the silly things that are now being revealed. He's costing himself, he's damaging his own credibility. It's the Republican script. They did it with Herman Cain, and they're going to do it the next time around. They're going to have a white woman and a black man in the primary again. That is their script. And the white woman is going to fade, and the black guy is going to sabotage himself. But
now,
Ben Carson is very, very reassuring for a great many Republican voters. He's very reassuring.
Absolutely. I wanted to get your thoughts on, and this is something that I noticed, that how he kind of brought slavery into a number of conversations as if, and my theory is that out of nowhere he starts talking about Obamacare being like slavery, and then he mentions something else like slavery. And my theory is that once you get a black person starting to do that, it kind of lets their guilt about slavery and the things that have happened since then and the ramifications of all of the development since that kind of lets them off the hook. And it's really bizarre to bring that into the conversation when it's not necessary. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts about that as well.
Well, you know, Ben Carson, it is rumored, because I say he can't be this stupid, but it's rumored that he has said that slavery was one of the best things that happened to black people, that we were brought to this country. That's the rumor. You know, it's hard to believe that anybody's that stupid. But he says things like that, again, black conservatives do not exist in order to influence black people. The conservatives and the white supremacists understand that black conservatives have no traction in the black community. They can't influence anything in the black community. Black people will not vote for Ben Carson, even if he is the presidential candidate for the Republican Party. The black conservatives, people like Ben Carson, exist for white people, not at all for black people. He's not talking to us. When he talks about slavery, he's not talking to us. He's trying to reassure whites that they are, so that they can be comfortable within their own racism. You know, the people who say that black people are their own worst enemy, and that black people are the condition of black people is because of the behavior of black people. See, there are whites who appreciate that message. They appreciate that narrative, and they need to have a black guy say it, so that as they continue to practice policies that are harmful to black people, both, you know, in the private arena and the public arena, both corporate America or political America, the decisions that they make, the policies that they enact, they are harmful to black people. But they need to be reassured every now and then by a black person not to pay attention to the protest of black people. Don't pay attention to what black people are saying. I'm black, and I'm doing well. And if all black people were like me, we would all be better off. Back in the 50s, they used to pull aside black people who had done something well, and they would say, "You're a credit to your race." And so you got Ben Carson. Now he is saying, "I'm a credit to my race. My race is the problem, not segregation, not racism, not mass incarceration, not inadequate schools. It's not that the schools don't function. It's not dysfunctional schools. It's children who are undisciplined. If the kids just won't take advantage of all of these opportunities that we have out here." And there are a lot of black people who say that as well. And if you say, well, name three of the opportunities, they can't do it. It's a lot of cliche rhetoric. But Ben Carson's appeal his appeal is that he's such a perfectly constructed black man, according to the guidelines laid out by white supremacy. He's got no courage. He's not strident. He's not outspoken. He's not angry. Donald Trump, early in the primaries, said that Ben Carson was an okay doctor. You remember that?
Yeah.
And he said he said that Ben Carson, some other things, just negative about Ben Carson. He wasn't impressed by Ben Carson. So Ben Carson's business manager, Armstrong Williams, was interviewed the day after, and they said, the reporters, a white man and woman, they were interviewing him, like, I don't know what channel, but they said, so what is Dr. Carson's response to that? Ben Carson's response, according to Armstrong, was that he apologizes to Donald Trump for making Donald Trump so angry that Donald Trump would speak out against him like that. Armstrong said that Ben Carson feels that Donald Trump is speaking from a position of pain. And we apologize for whatever pain we caused him because we didn't do it deliberately. I saw remember that TV show used to be about the pimps on up in the Bronx? I forgot what it was called. Pimps Up, Hoes Down. There was one of the working girls who had gotten beat up by a pimp. And so the people doing the interview, the documentary, they talked to her, and she'd been on other series, and then they asked her what happened, and she said she had to come off the stroll for a while because she had to go live with her sister in order to recover because she got beat up by a pimp. They said, "What, you got beat up by a pimp?" She said, "Yeah, but he didn't want to do it. I made him do it. He told me to shut up, and I wouldn't shut up. So he didn't want to hit me, but I just wouldn't shut up. That's Ben Carson. Ben Carson, mm-hmm. he says, Donald Trump didn't want to do it. I made him do it. I apologize to Donald Trump for making him so angry that he would speak out against me. See, that's a black man that has been carefully constructed by white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, Armstrong Williams plays a role in that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
in terms of his political agenda,
What concerns me about Armstrong Williams is that I don't know if you guys are aware that he got a number of television stations that he's purchased, and I'm just concerned about what the type of product and content that he's going to produce and allow to be on these stations. Recently read this on one of the an article on the internet that he has a number of television stations, syndicated stations, and it's interesting. It remains to be seen what kind of.
Let me ask you this: What does Armstrong Williams do for a living?
Who knows?
He was a talk show host, and and that was about it. But. Now it seems like he has more of an involvement with the Republican Party from the perspective of being an advisor. But other than that, we really don't know. And I did read the article about him owning and doing something to show diversity in the media business. But I don't consider Armstrong Williams someone who I would, pursue work for, just based on how he has been over the years.
Mm-hmm. Well, it takes an awful lot of money to buy radio and television stations.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knows what Armstrong Williams does for a living. Nobody knows, and it wasn't from doing talk, because he was doing talk radio. He was working for black folk. I know he wasn't getting paid big money.
Hey, listen, I'm glad you said it because, I have no reason to deny that.
Right.
We've all been down that street.
That's right.
I'm just going to say, Bob is like Felipe Luciano. Wherever adversity strikes, he manages to bounce back. I haven't had that luck.
Well,
thank goodness for Bob.
On a serious level, would wonder who actually owns the radio stations or the TV stations, if in fact Armstrong is the owner. The people talk about Magic Johnson owns the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the other guy, the guy with the initial Jay-Z, owns the basketball team. In fact, Jay-Z owns 1.2% or something, and Magic does not own the Los Angeles Dodgers. He doesn't even own the Magic Johnson Theaters. When they talk about someone owns, it's just quite, but now you know where that the possibilities are there for a guy like Magic Johnson, because he has made a lot of money. You know where his money comes from, but you have no idea where how it is that Armstrong Williams is even in a position to buy, and then to even operate a television station,
That's what I'm concerned about.
So you mentioned my mother said that's what she was concerned about, Armstrong.
Yeah, I didn't see that we were talking with him, I'll tell you.
But I'd like to get your opinion about this, since we talked about ownership of some of these things, some of these media outlets. And what comes to mind is Bill Cosby's attempt to buy NBC those years ago. And and now that has been revealed as some of his actions that he has taken. And I listened to an interview with Dick Gregory, where the interviewer, it was a small interview. I guess the guy had his own little radio show. And he asked Dick Gregory about what he thought about Bill Cosby's situation. And Dick Gregory went into a story about his life and his experience about how he had a woman call him out of the blue to say that he was the father of her daughter. And this is a woman that he had never seen or had any contact with. This woman might have met her in passing once. And as the story went on, he began to describe how it was an attempt to blackmail him. And he also went on to describe how in certain circumstances, in certain circles, there have been attempts when they see African-Americans that are really rising in influence and finance and to do something as major as buy a network, that some of these issues start to come out. You know, Bill Cosby is a rapist. Michael Jackson is a child molester. That comes out when has the catalog that's making most of the money for Sony Music. And whether these things are true or not, and there seems to be some evidence that some of those things might have come into play, particularly I'm talking about with Bill Cosby, I'm just wondering your experience or your knowledge or what your take is on, since we're along those lines of thinking. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that certainly there is a very deliberate effort to discredit, undermine, sabotage, discourage black, strident black voices, strident black men in particular, but strident black people. It is what happened to Cynthia McKinney, who speaks forcefully and truthfully. It is what happened to Congressman Gus Savage in Chicago. There's an effort to discredit, and in discrediting also discourage that kind of a posture on the part of other black people. It is to scare other people away from standing as they really should and being what their people need them to be at any point in our history. If Bill Cosby is accused of seducing women, and if he did the things that they said to take advantage of them, and that they were seduced and unknowingly, you know, if we were to believe what they have said, somehow they were in his room. He didn't go to their house; they came to his room. They were in his company, and they woke up the next morning and they had been taken advantage of. And that is inappropriate behavior, certainly, on his part. Certain amount of inappropriate behavior on their part as well. But there's inappropriate behavior, and that cannot be just dismissed. You do not have a right to take advantage of, do harm to women, no matter what condition. You know, if a woman walks down the street with a short, tight skirt, you don't have a right to grab her, you know, because she's wearing this short, tight skirt. It might be inappropriate behavior on her part, but does not entitle men to put their hands on her, to take her, take advantage of her. So we can't dismiss what the actions that Bill Cosby is accused of.
Right.
But I don't think that an entire life, an entire career, an entire life is to be judged by that alone. Bill Cosby has done a number of things that were of great value to the black community in general, to opening doors for blacks in the entertainment industry. You know, I'm coming, music, radio, we were very much a part of the entertainment industry. Those are some of the most shallow folk. Some of them are wonderful, and a lot of them are just shallow. And now making jokes about Bill Cosby and not looking back at, you know, the Bill Cosby TV show, the Huxtable family, is what made it possible for many, many other black situation comedies and other,
right.
and other, because before the Huxtable family, Hollywood or New York where TV is done, they were not comfortable and didn't know how a decent black family that were not buffoons, they didn't know how that would get over, you know.
Bob,
and so Bill,
listen,
but Bill,
Bob, I hate to interrupt you, but we're coming to the end of the show. We have about 2 minutes left.
Wow.
So
but listen, let me tell you this. Here's what I want you all to do. But wait, I want your audience to consider, particularly when you look at the video that was just shown about the police killing in Chicago.
Yeah.
It is time for the black community to say enough is enough and to
begin
to look for ways that we can have an impact. And one of the things that people are doing around the country is developing an economic withdrawal movement. It is launched on Black Friday, where there are going to be black folk in a few cities around the country who are not going to shop on Black Friday. And it's not a holiday boycott. It is the launching of an economic withdrawal movement. It is what Martin Luther King asked us to do 50 years ago, the night before he was assassinated in Memphis. He said that we have to attach economic withdrawal to our external direct action. We don't have enough time to talk about it, but I want you all to consider not spending any money on Black Friday. And there's a whole lot more to it, but that's a starting point.
Well, Mr. Law, we want to have you come back maybe next week, even so we can continue this conversation, because as you're talking, there's a number of other things. I myself think that Black Friday should include no black athletes playing any sports.
Right.
As a
it's
going to
grow. I hear you.
Much
I'd
like
be glad
Jim
to
Brown,
listen. You have to talk to my agent. My agent is named Kay Thompson. If you can talk to my agent, and if she can get me twice as much as I'm getting for this night, I'll come back.
All right. I think I have a good connection, but we got to go. We're up on 30 seconds. I want to say
okay.
Thank you to the legendary news people that I have. First, my mom is legendary, Kay Thompson, Wayne Gilman, and Mr. Bob Law.
And Mal Wolfer.
You're all legendary black journalists. And I've grown up with my mom and been exposed to you, an incredible gentleman, so it's been an honor for me. Well, thank everybody
you
for listening.
It's an honor also.
Thank you. Good
all
night.
Right, now, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Kay Thompson Live Show. Listen again next week, 8 to 9 p.m. live. Or you can also hear the show archived. I'm Eric Payne. You are?
Kay Thompson. Join us again Wednesday.
All right. Thanks. And Wayne, that was Wayne Gilman. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. We'll see you again. Bye-bye.